Welcome everyone to Art of Advisory, and my name is Hector Garcia from Quick Bookkeeping, and I'm joined by my good friend and co-host Kirk Bowman from Art of Value. Hey Kirk, how are you?
I'm good, Hector. Good to be back with another week.
That's right. And we want to talk about effectiveness versus efficiency. And before we dive into it, effectiveness versus efficiency, let me ask you a question. Is this a topic that is, let me think about it. Do you think that this is a topic that it's a little bit played out? You know, is effectiveness versus efficiency something that you hear over and over and over? Or is it a good thing or a bad thing? Should we hear it over and over and over? What do you think about that?
So it seems like a simple concept, right? In fact, your first reaction is, well, why is it or? Shouldn't it be both? And maybe, but we're going to unpack that as we go. But it's actually not a simple concept, because I find that most of the time we tend to gravitate, and I say we, meaning society, we tend to gravitate toward efficiency, and we tend to forget effectiveness. And probably the first thing that we ought to do is define both of those. So do you want to do that, or would you like for me to?
Sure. I'll give it a crack. So I like the one that says efficiency is doing the right things and effectiveness is doing things right. I don't know if that's a quote from Peter Drucker, or he keeps somehow is labeled to that quote. But in essence, efficiency means that in terms of doing stuff, like you're doing stuff that feel like is the right stuff that you should be doing. And effectiveness doesn't really care too much about what you're doing or how you're doing it. It cares about whether or not you can achieve the end result, or you're getting something out of your actions, not necessarily just measuring your actions. Maybe you can define it better than I can.
Well, and I think it was a good demonstration on your part of why this is so confusing, because it really is kind of yin and yang, you know, positive and negative, so to speak. You know, these are two kindred spirits that are kind of, you know, diametrically opposed, and it's easy to get them confused, is my point. So you're right. Drucker defined them in this way. He said efficiency is doing, and see, now I got to stop and think about it, because I'm about to say it the wrong way.
Doing things right, or doing the right things.
Efficiency is doing the thing right. Effectiveness is doing the right thing. You can be very efficient at doing the wrong thing.
That's better.
And that's the problem that we want to address. Efficiency for efficiency's sake is not enough. If you're being efficient, but it's not effective, it doesn't matter, is another way to say it. Being effective means that you are doing the right thing in that situation, the thing that will bring about the desired outcome. In the context of advisory, that would be the desired outcome that the customer has stated and that we've agreed to help them achieve. If we're, and so in the context of advisory, to kind of put it in the context of a customer, if we are helping the customer become more efficient, but that efficiency is not helping them pursue the desired outcome, in other words, be effective, then we're actually not helping. We actually could be harming, because in that instance, we're actually helping them to get better at something that has no value per se to them, because it's not a result that they want to achieve. So in other words, efficiency for efficiency's sake is wrong. Efficiency should be secondary to being effective. So first make sure you're doing the right thing. Then once you're doing the right thing, then it's okay to step back and go, okay, how do we improve this? How do we increase efficiency in this process? But if it's not the correct process or the proper guideline or the proper mission, I mean, let's get big picture, you know, for an organization. If it's not the right mission, Doesn't matter.
Right. And it's possible to be efficient at executing a really bad idea. You know, like Fidel Castro was pretty efficient at implementing communism in Cuba. And maybe in his mind, he thought he was effective, but did he effectively help or increase the economy, the GDP of that, of the intellectual capital that that country exports? Not really. You know, it's a country that's ravished with poverty. Now, very efficiently, they implemented communism and socialism. And it's always a bad idea. I don't know why. It just keeps coming up every couple of years. People think there's always a segment of people that think that pushing people for equality of outcome is somehow a good idea. But efficiency and effectiveness are confused. Well, first of all, because they start with the first three letters, and this is our friend Ed Kless from, you know, your colleague from Verisage calls it the effing debate. But it's also because the word effective is actually not used so much in our language. I think not that many people use the word, although it's the better of the two words if we were to compare the two and you were to choose one over the other. But the word efficiency is used in so many contexts. In our profession, particularly in accounting, efficiency is linked to working fast, right? To getting the work done faster or doing less work than the day before. Efficiency is like fast data entry. Or that's being efficient. Or not spending too much time on the phone with the customers. Or not spending billable time doing lollygagging around or whatever it is. So efficiency is normally connected with, am I doing work that I'm being paid for? And that's pretty much what a lot of us in the accounting profession connect efficiency with. And, you know, and how would you measure efficiency in marketing, for example? You know, like, you know, are you, if you're doing marketing, are you being inefficient? Well, technically you are, because efficiency is a measurement of inputs and billable time. You know, how would you, what's the relationship between that and being effective? And I think the best way to describe it is, you know, I spend 20% of my billable time in marketing. 20%. Now, marketing is a pretty broad term. I would say that this podcast is marketing. I would say my YouTube videos is marketing. Stuff that I write is marketing. I mean, there's so many things that is marketing. But I spend 20% of my time. And we're talking about, you know, that's a big chunk. That's one out of five, you know, days that I spend just building a brand and creating awareness and educating my customers and my future customers. But now I am, even though I do that, I'm actually effective at having a much higher profitability, because with my better brand, with the better goodwill that I have in the marketplace, I can charge much, much higher than I could before under the billable time efficient model. And I'm able to be more selective with my clients, and I can be effective at delivering the most amount of value possible. So efficiency is about working hard, and effectiveness is about what they say, working smart. So I think that's probably a much, from my first explanation, I think that's maybe a better explanation. But the big challenge is that there's nothing wrong with being efficient. Just make sure that you're not being efficient at a bad idea or doing something bad. What did Stephen Covey said? He said, if you lay the ladder in the wrong wall, every step is a step closer in the wrong direction. You know, so it just doesn't matter how fast you climb that ladder, you're going to go to the wrong place. And this is stuff that everybody knows. Like, I don't think anyone is like saying, oh my God, I didn't know that. Everybody knows this. This is part of our day-to-day. The problem is that I think that we subconsciously forget, and in the forefront of our mind, it's efficiency, because efficiency is the left side of the brain, because efficiency is logical, because efficiency can be measured. And I think maybe we could talk about measurements, because that may be one of the biggest culprits of us forgetting about effectiveness. but efficiency is in the forefront, and sometimes is the biggest lesson I've had. Sometimes you must be inefficient in order to be effective.
Let's give a real world example of being efficient. And now again, I don't know what it is. Week after week, I get to a point in the broadcast where I totally forget what I was going to say.
It's age,
I
totally forgot it now. It's age.
It's age. Thanks. Yeah. What was it? The lack of hair or the gray beard that gave me away. So it'll come back to me, but I've got a backup. So I went ahead and pulled up definitions of these three words. And when, it's funny, when you pull up efficiency, it says, you know, basically the art of being efficient. So I had to pull up instead of efficiency, pull up efficient. So the definition of efficient is achieving maximum productivity with minimal wasted effort or expense. And we all can hear that definition and go, yes, that's something I want. You know, I don't want wasted effort or wasted expense. Effectiveness, the degree to which something is successful in producing a desired result. And then you get to efficacy, which, by the way, is EFFICACY, the ability to produce a desired or intended result. So it's almost like, you know, efficacy is like, how well are you producing the desired result? Effectiveness is, are you producing a desired result? So efficacy is the degree to which effectiveness is almost like a true or false or binary, are you or are you not? Although the definition could be read otherwise, that's a slight distinction. And then, of course, efficient, going back to not wasting time or anything. So I thought of my example that I was going to lead with. And so let me go back to that. Let's think about a firm, okay? So an accounting firm, bookkeeping firm, et cetera. Let's think about a firm where if you're billing by the hour, your goal probably is going to be as efficient with your time as possible. In other words, you want as much of your time to be billable as you can. In fact, a lot of firms that charge by the hour, they actually have, you know, they'll call it utilization rates where, okay, 70% of your time must be billable, 80% of your time must be billable, et cetera. Well, what determines whether, all your time is billable or not? Well, ultimately, whether the customer pays an invoice for it. And a lot of firms that bill by the hour wind up having to do write-offs because one of the common things that you see in an hourly billable model is you send an invoice and the customers disagree whether you should have done this or whether it should have taken this long or whatever. And you wind up essentially writing off some of that time, something you were going to charge for. You say, all right, we won't charge you for that. And so you wind up having a write-off. So in that sense right there, when you write off time, you're lowering your efficiency, right? You're lowering your utilization rate. But let's flip it over to a firm that operates on a value model. In a value business model, we actually believe that we should not be running at extremely high capacity. In other words, we should not be using all the capacity that our firm has. If we're running around in the 80 to 90% of capacity used, something's going on. We need to add some additional team members so that we can lower that. Or maybe we've taken on the wrong customers. Maybe we're not pricing high enough. There are several things you can look at, but the bottom line is, we find that firms really want to be more around that, you know, 70-ish range, give or take, because when you have excess capacity, you then have the ability to sell that capacity in an emergency situation, and you can sell it at a premium. Airlines are one of the best examples. If you have already purchased your airline ticket for Scaling New Heights coming up in Atlanta next month, then you got a better rate than somebody who decides to go 3 days before the conference starts. The conference starts on a Sunday. If you decide on Friday you want to go, you're going to pay, you know, through the nose to get there. In fact, airlines will let seats go unoccupied because they have done the analysis over time and they know it's better to reserve some of your capacity for those last minute emergency situations so that when a customer comes in and is willing to pay that high premium, you have something to sell them. They're more profitable the few times those seats go unoccupied than if they didn't have them at all. Does that make sense? In other words, yeah, there's a few times when those high ticket seats don't sell, but most of the time they do. And so they're willing to let them go unoccupied occasionally because when they sell them, most of the time they're making a premium on it. And you look at the airline, right? I don't care how, now the airline cares, but I don't care. You think about a plane trip. I really don't care how efficient the airline gets me there from a standpoint of, did they use all their fuel? I mean, I'd rather them not use every single drop, right? But I don't care whether it took them, you know, half a tank or they were flying into a headwind. It took them 75% of the tank. That really doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is, did we land safely? Now, I am concerned in the standpoint of efficiency of, did we get there on time? But if it's a choice between being late or crashing, I'll take late. So there are some additional thoughts and defining those words and why this is so important, especially to a firm that's operating under a value model.
Right. And exactly what you're saying. You must have a sense of purpose before you do anything. And being efficient for efficiency's sake, which is exactly what you're mentioning, without a purpose, will never lead to effectiveness. Because you really don't know what you're getting to. You know, when the airline created a business model, you know, they saw the, you know, their model is, we transport people from point A to point B and make as much profit as possible. Yeah, that's the business model. Their purpose is to stay in business forever, right? I mean, every company's purpose is to stay in business forever. One of the conditions to stay in business forever is that you have to deliver the people alive, right? So if the airline wants to achieve their motive as efficiently as possible, they're going to, as you say, they're going to use just the right amount of fuel, right? That being, assuming that's the most expensive cost that they have. Whereas, like you said, like maybe if they only use 80% of their fuel, they're not being as efficient, but they're ensuring that there's a much higher chance, just in case you have to go in circles a couple of times before you land, or there's weather conditions, that you bring the people alive. Therefore, it ensures that your business, it's open forever, and that in essence is effective. So I think one of the biggest challenges that we have is not having that sense of purpose. There, you mentioned Scaling New Heights, which is run by a guy by the name of Joe Woodard, who a couple of years ago went to the Disney Institute, and he brought back with him a fable that connected with me a lot the first time he mentioned it from the Disney Institute. He said that they all went out to tour the park. Disney World Park, Magic Kingdom, whichever one happened to be in Orlando. And they were observing, you know, they were out there just observing, you know, the greatness of Disney, which is all, by the way, highly inefficient things, but very effective at their purpose. See, Disney's purpose is to create a positive memory, right? That's their purpose. Like they're very, very grounded that this is what, well, you could argue that their purpose is to slap their brand into a toy and sell it. But their underlying purpose is to build and create long-lasting memories to the families that go vacation to Disney. So the story goes like this. There's a custodian, a person that, you know, picks up the trash, who's there in a corner. He has a zone where he has to pick up all the trash and throw it away. And a family comes to them and they ask, hey, where can I find the ice cream store? Or the ice cream parlor, the parlor. Okay. And an efficient custodian would, you know, keep one hand on the broom, right? Because he needs to keep brooming. He needs to be efficient. He needs to do so many brooms per second or whatever. And take the other hand and go, well, you can go right over there and go to the ice cream parlor over there. That's an efficient custodian. And under all modern measurements of efficiency and productiveness, that's what you expect from that custodian. To, if you're going to be interrupted for a second, well, at least keep brooming with the other hand. Whereas that, you know, that person has a choice. He can let go of the room for a second, look at them in the eye and say, you see that direction over there? You can walk in that direction and make a right. Or you can maybe, make a couple steps, get him a little bit closer to it where it's visible and say, here you go. But what that custodian did was picked up the broom and started marching towards it and told the family, follow me this way. And it kind of started like a makeshift marching band and did it all the way through the ice cream parlor. Okay. He pretty much was off task, being extremely inefficient as a custodian, but very effective at achieving the grand goal that Disney has, which is to create memorable experience for the customers. And that is the type of corporate culture that you want to have. Even if you're a one-man show, that's the type of corporate culture you want to have, where your purpose is very well defined. And your purpose is good. Like, it needs to be a good purpose. Like, if the purpose is to defraud people, I don't want you to be efficient at that, or effective for that matter. But if your purpose is to add value to the world, to add value to your customer, whichever one that happens to be, and you must be almost purposefully inefficient in order to effectively achieve that purpose, then you're doing the right thing. That you're doing, so called, you're doing things right. You're doing things right. So sometimes you must do what seems like in the short term is the wrong thing. So in the long run, you're doing things right. So I actually, you mentioned Joe Wooder, and I thought because the first time I heard that story, it just stuck with me. It is such a perfect way to explain the difference between efficiency and effectiveness.
I'm glad you tied it to purpose, because you not only have a purpose as a business, and as you said, even a solopreneur can have a purpose and should have a purpose, not just can, but should, although many of them unfortunately do not. But the bigger the organization gets, whether it's going from 1 to 2 or 2 to 5 or 5 to 15 or whatever, the larger the organization gets, the more important purpose becomes. Why? Because it is much easier to forget what it means to be effective for the organization the more people you get. It's easier to get off track. There's more people. You get 2 people off track, that can easily multiply to 3, 5, and et cetera. So yes, you need to make sure that what you're doing is effective for your organization, but also effective for the customer. When we talk about pricing, we say we don't price the service, we price the customer. Is it efficient to price each customer? No, not really. It would be more efficient to price the service and just post it on a website. But there are other reasons that trump efficiency, i.e., we are committed to being effective. There are things that pertain to the mission of the organization that we've determined to be effective. We need to be pricing the customer rather than the service. So again, it's a simple concept, but we can apply it to so many different things. And I see it a lot in software, and I think you probably see it a lot in accounting and bookkeeping. You see it anytime part of the business is helping the customer improve processes or define and implement processes. It is very easy to get off track and think, we just got to make this process better, make this process better, make this process better. If you're making that process better, but it doesn't either A, contribute to the mission of the organization or contribute substantially, then I think there's an argument to be made that you're really caught in the trap of efficiency for efficiency's sake. An example, you pick a process. If a process is going to save a business $2,500 a week, that's probably something you need to look at. If it's going to save a business $25 a week, I doubt it's worth it. Right. Now, you mentioned scaling new heights. Of course, you're being humble, and I appreciate that. Doesn't happen all the time, but I appreciate it when it does happen. But tongue in cheek, but seriously, you're going to be doing a whole session on this topic, right? I think is it Monday morning?
I'm doing it on Monday afternoon.
Okay, Monday afternoon.
Unfortunately, I think it'll conflict with your day 2 or the second year of value pricing class, isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, that's Monday afternoon. Yeah, I'm doing kind of a part one and part two.
Yeah, so I'm doing a session called, so it's called How Effectiveness Trumps Efficiency in Relationship Work. And the theme of the conference is Tame the Machines. It's all about, you know, how artificial intelligence and computers are, quote, taking over. I always find it funny when people say they add the word taking over and computers in the same sentence, but they're taking over, you know, our jobs or capacity to produce, blah, blah, blah. But what the session really focuses on is that, you know, people-to-people relationships cannot be efficient. They can only be effective. You can be efficient with things. You know, you can grab something, you know, so, you know, as hard as possible, or throw it as fast as possible, or bang it as hard as possible, right? In the case of a tool or something like that. But I don't think you could replace that with a person, right? You know, one of the things that I heard someone say, probably was Ron Baker. He was quoting someone else. You know, I never really catch who he quotes. I give him credit for everything. He said, you know, would you go to your spouse and say, we have a very efficient marriage? You know, it's almost like who said that the opposite of love is efficiency, not hate. And it's because of that. And you think of like prenuptial agreements, for example. I mean, that's as efficient as it gets, right? We divvy up our stuff. We create a document that says, this is mine, this is yours. Right before we get married, which is supposed to be about love and all this stuff, you know, we're going to just create this mathematical equation of what will happen after we're not married anymore. So people don't do prenuptial agreements because marriage is about love and it's about, you know, affection and effectiveness, right? Effectiveness at growing together, effectiveness as adding two people together, you know, to multiply. And I don't mean with children, I mean like 1 + 1 = 3, you know, a synergy. And an efficiency which doesn't have space for this. Efficiency doesn't understand how when you add two things together, the result is higher than two. You know, efficiency doesn't understand that when two people do business, both people can profit. And the value creation from two people interacting could be higher than the sum of these parts. Efficiency doesn't understand that in professional services, it's not a zero-sum game. It's not that, you know, we gain money from our customers and therefore they lost money because they hired us. No, the client chose to do something else with their time and they gladly paid you so you can do what you love to do with your time, which was supposed to be your profession, and solve a problem for them. No human being is born with the skills that they're paid to do when they become a professional. They became a professional because they became experts at it, because they focused on one thing, because they dedicated their studies to it, because they love it. And then someone else doesn't and is happy for that. I don't, you know, when I get sick, I'm happy to pay the doctor because I don't want to learn how to like cut myself and cure myself. I don't see anything positive in that. So if I wanted to be as efficient as possible, I would do everything myself and not hire anyone else to do the work that I can't do. But I want to be effective and I want to focus on what I love and what I do really well. And I'll gladly pay someone else that's more effective than I am at doing the same thing. And the sum of the two is actually more than the sum of its parts. So that's why, you know, that's why I like the analogy of the opposite of love is efficiency. Because love is one of those things that can only be achieved with two human beings being together. Machines don't love. Machines don't have relationships. Machines don't have affection. And if you put two machines to work together, yeah, make them as efficient as possible. That's what the whole purpose is. We almost design machines to work with each other. Like we design tools to fit with each other. You know, there's a reason why the hammer is shaped the way it's shaped, and there's a reason why the nail is shaped the way it's shaped. You know, we did that. We created that. We created efficiency You know, by having these two things banging together, it creates, you could build a house with, right? A house is worth more than the sum of the materials, right? That's the concept. Is, you know, things are meant to be efficient, and people, when they have good relationships, positive relationships, when they both extract value from each other, that's effectiveness. And that's what this session is supposed to be about. And I'm going to get into some of the details around that, but it's to convince folks that in this computer human world where we're living hand in hand, let the computers be efficient, and you be efficient when you manipulate them, right? Like, I have an employee that I want him to be fast at typing, but I don't want him to be fast at communicating. I want him to be precise with communicating. They're two different things. The computer understands things as fast as you can type them, and people can understand things as fast as they can process them. And that is not something you can measure with efficiency. And that is, sometimes it takes years for people to understand something that they've been told 100 times, where a computer will understand the commands right away. So that's what the session's about. It's about kind of like humanizing relationships and understanding that it's almost impossible to be effective. I mean, to be efficient with people. You can only try to be effective with people.
It's interesting. If you stop and think, you'll realize that some things efficiency is a good thing, and some things efficiency is not a good thing. Let's look at some possible examples. So you mentioned healthcare, all right? If you're going to have our open heart surgery, would you rather the doctor be as efficient as possible or as effective as possible? And yes, they might be able to be efficient while being effective, but I really hope they're not watching the clock. I hope they are taking their time. Something is going to take longer, that they take that time to do the best job they can, no matter how long it takes. As long as, you know, look at open heart surgery. What's you know, kind of effective is number one, the patient leaves alive, right? And stays alive. Okay. Number two, the surgery is successful in the sense that whatever procedures being done on the heart improves the quality of life for the patient, whether that's extending their life, you know, cleaning out the plumbing, so to speak, so that the heart can, you know, work easier, etc. I'm not concerned about efficiency at all. Another example, you know, I enjoy a good wine. Well, there is nothing efficient about making good wine. Nothing efficient about making good wine. Now, I'm sure, you know, again, you don't want things to take forever, but wine is one of those things where, you know, we got a Total Wine store that opened up a couple of years ago here in Allen. You go in and the efficient wine's the cheap stuff. The effective wine, it's the stuff in the glass case that's locked and you can see the prices, but you can't even touch that stuff unless you're going to make a purchase, right? The bottles that, you know, are maybe, you know, 500 or more per bottle. And you nailed it when you said that we're kind of driven to efficiency because of technology. In fact, we need to step back and realize not all technology is good technology. Zappos is another great example. At Zappos, their effectiveness is to create happiness. And so you think about a call center. Normally, you would think that someone on a call center, they are measured effective by how quickly they can push through their calls, not at Zappos. It's a bragging right for the person who's taken the longest on a call, as long as they're being effective. Now, just dragging it out for dragging out's sake, that's not what we're talking about. But the record at Zappos is, I want to say something like 8 hours or something. But at Zappos, they will do what it takes. They encourage their customer service representatives who answer the phones to find out about their customers. When's their birthday? Why are they buying these shoes? Are they buying them for someone else? Is it a special occasion? Send them something nice, etc. In fact, I would say at Zappos, efficiency is pretty much nowhere on the drawing board. Another example at Zappos, taking tours. I mean, how many businesses do you know where they can actually take people on tours, that the business is so successful, people just want to go be around them, be in their operation? Zappos is one of those. In fact, you have to reserve the tour in advance. You can't just show up. You can't just go today or the next day. Zappos is one of the great, great companies that put effectiveness way above efficiency, may not even think about efficiency at all, at least in the area of where it comes to being effective with the customer.
You know, you were talking about Zappos and stuff. I was thinking about gifts, you know, and you were asking about, when's your birthday and stuff like that. You know, we give our clients gifts, right? So sometimes we give them a gift card, and I think that's probably one of the worst ones, but we give them a gift card, or we give them, you know, some object or maybe tickets to a game, or we take them to dinner or whatever it happens to be. You know, if you want it to be as efficient as possible, you just send them money, right? Because the numerically speaking, you know, that game is worth something. Like, you can just send them $100 and say, buy whatever you want. You know, maybe you'll buy a ticket to the game or something like that. That's efficient, right? I mean, like, spend the same amount of money, maybe a little bit less of effort, and check the mark, the check mark that says, gave the customer $100. Or, you know, you buy the tickets, you pick the client up, you take him to the game, you have conversations, you build a relationship, you drop them off. And that was just extremely inefficient. Not only you spend the same amount of money, but you spend time with them. But what you want is that customer to stay with you. What you want is when the competitor calls them and says, I can do the same thing for cheaper, and the customer say, not interested. That's it. I mean, like, people buy, like, not everyone buys things as efficiently as possible. You know, otherwise, people wouldn't buy groceries on Amazon, okay? Amazon groceries are more expensive than the grocery store. Look it up, okay? You know, people have built a lifestyle around Amazon Prime, and that they're effective by creating a wish list on Amazon, hitting buy, 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 buy. It all comes in a box, and it comes in, and that's not as efficient. Like, if you actually factor in the cost of, you know, you driving to the supermarket and buying something, or just getting exactly what you wanted from Amazon, you can be a lot more effective. Plus, you know, have you ever gone to the supermarket with a list and only get from that list? You always get 2-3 things more. You know, with Amazon, you only get what you wanted because you ordered it. So you can be much more effective from the perspective of just getting what you need, while not being as efficient, you know, because you're not saving money by buying from Amazon. So our behavior is not always efficient. Like, we're not programmed to be efficient. The left side of our brain tries to dominate us with that mentality. Yes, we want to be, like, something in our body is asking us to be efficient in every step of the way. But the right side of our brain, the one that has to, you know, ponder and be creative and feel and have compassion and love, this is the one that's always at odds with the efficient side of our brain, saying, hey, you know, you don't have to be efficient all the time. This is why at work we love breaks. You know, we love to, like, get a second to say, okay, let me think about what I just did. You know, let me reflect upon what I just learned. Reflection is one of the most inefficient things out there. Like, I never had a boss go to someone and say, hey, why are you not working? And the person says, I'm reflecting upon what I learned. And they say, oh, that's great. No, they say, no, get back to work. You know, but when you reflect upon what you learn, and somehow you can turn that reflection into something in your permanent memory, so then the next time you do it, it will actually even be more efficient, or you have to do less steps, you're going to be more effective at achieving the result. So again, sometimes you must be inefficient in order to achieve effectiveness. And I think that, and I'll ask you to comment on that. And also, I think that the other challenge is not just the left side of our brain taking over with all this logic and reason. I think one of the problems is measurements. I think that we are so obsessed with measuring things, and measurements, or the sake of measurement, or the feeling that measuring something gives you a sense of security, I think drives us to pointless efficiency.
It's interesting that you mentioned measurements, because one of the common questions I get is, okay, if I've been operating my business under an hourly model and I switch over to value pricing, and part of, you know, implementing value pricing is trashing timesheets, then how do I know if I'm hitting the mark? In other words, what people are asking is, what metrics should I look at? And two or three of the common metrics that we recommend people look at, they're not based on degree. They're just kind of based on, did we hit the mark, yes or no, not to what degree. So let's take one of those metrics as an example. We use the term HSD, which is an abbreviation for high satisfaction day. What is a high satisfaction day? It is any day that you realize this is the reason you do what you do. And typically, it's either because you achieve a certain outcome with a customer, or you receive a thank you note from a customer, you receive a great referral, etc. It's any time you know something happens and this is why I love to do this. What do? How do we know if we hit an HSD? Well, if somebody on the team says, I had an HSD and this is why, we put down a check mark. And then we just count the check marks. We don't know how efficient we were at achieving those HSDs. In fact, I would argue the more HSDs you have, probably the less efficient you're being, but you're definitely being more effective. That's the example. And I think you really encapsulated it earlier when you just said, look, we're not in the service business, we're in the relationship business. And relationships are not efficient, they're effective. I mean, you think about your best relationships. Why are they your best relationships? Because you've invested time. I mean, I think about my best friend, James. Oh my goodness. He and I met literally like the same month my daughter was born. So my daughter's about to turn 13. That friendship is 13 years long. And I don't say long as in, oh my gosh, it's so long. No, as in it's been so rich. I mean, we've been on ski vacations together. We've been to Disney together. Our families hang out. I mean, if they're like, for example, the Memorial Day weekend, just saw them this past weekend because we were hanging out and I said, hey, what are you doing? Oh, we got family coming. I said, us too, yada, yada. Well, it turns out they're not doing anything Monday. We're not doing anything Monday. We said, hey, let's just get together and hang out. Let's do a game night. We go to each other's activities for their children. So we went to their daughter's school performance a couple weeks ago. Well, they came to my daughter's theater performance recently. It's those kind of things. James asked me the other day, you want to talk about efficiency, okay? So they invited us to have lunch with them after church. They go to one church kind of on one side of town. We go to a church on the other side. It's not just, it's like separate towns.
Rival anyway, churches.
They're 20 minutes one way, we're 20 minutes the other, so we meet in the middle. So we get together for lunch, and then he goes, okay, his wife was out of town, so he was being Mr. Mom, just him and the kids. And he said, hey, I need you, if you would, after we have lunch, would you follow me up to Tammy's his wife, to Tammy's parents? He's going to drop the car off because Tammy's getting in late at night. She's going to get a ride to her parents' house, and then she'll need a car to come home. So would you take me, meaning James and the kids, would you drive us back to their house? And so basically, essentially what he's saying, if you want to put it in efficiency terms, he was saying, would you add on another 20 minutes to drive to Tammy's parents, then another 20 minutes to drive to our house, and then finally a third set of 20 minutes to drive back to your house? Would you add an extra hour onto your trip for me? That is anything but efficient, but oh gosh, is it so effective. Number one, I was honored that he would ask. I was honored that he felt so much strength in our relationship, so much confidence that he was willing to ask me to do something that on the surface was highly inefficient. Some people might go, why would you ask me that? That's rude. No, he knew that when it was something that really mattered and was, quote, not efficient, he knew the effectiveness of our relationship trumped it.
And it's friendship, like you said, friendship is not efficient. And but I'm friendship and relationships, I'm going to say they're the same thing. When you have a client, a customer or a client that's a friend of yours, and I can say friend in quotes, because not all of our working relationships with our clients fall into the friend category. But when you consider each other a friend, so it's nice to have a relationship where you respect each other. But when you have genuine affection for the other person, even if it's a business relationship, we do inefficient things like forgive each other. And there's nothing more inefficient than forgiveness. But forgiveness is the stuff that allows us to endure the little bad things so that we can later on reap on the benefits of the big good things. When you build a relationship with people at work, for example, and you have a lot of friends, let's call it, you have a lot of friends, you can make mistakes all day long. What do your coworkers do? They jump in. They fix it for you. They even cover up different issue, or they even collude to help you get out of the mess. I mean, this stuff happens. This is real. And when you have a relationship or a friendship with someone, the normal stuff of life happens. You know, like something comes up, someone gets sick, someone screws up. You hire an employee that screws up. Your customer gave you the wrong data and you did the data entry twice, whatever. But when you have a working relationship and a friendly relationship, you forgive each other and that relationship stays on for longer. Whereas when we don't, when we have this cold business relationship that's, you know, professional to customer, you know, it's, you know, I'm their lawyer and you're my client and that's it. You know, if one person screws up, the other person, one person's going to send the other one a bill, or the other person's going to leave him and change him for another professional. So it's making mistakes is inevitable, you know, and being inefficient is inevitable. And do you want a customer that calls you out in all your inefficiencies, or has the patience to wait for you to finish and fix and give him the end result and say, it was worth waiting because I trusted you. I trusted you that you would come through. Think about trust. There's a book that I love called The Speed of Trust. Now, speed is efficient. Trust is not, right? Because if you think about it, if you were to use a computer algorithm, and you know more about programming than I do, but if you were to use computer algorithm to make the computer or the software make a decision on whether or not they should trust something, what are they going to do? Well, they're going to use statistics. Right? They're going to say, well, look at the past. If, you know, 90% plus said yes, then we're going to trust that this is high probability of happening. That's, computers can only measure trust in probabilities. Computers are mathematical. But people trust people for other strange reasons. Like, I've had people that have failed on me over and over and over. And they looked at me in the eye and they cried and they told me their story and they say, give me a chance. Trust me, please. And you say yes. Why? Because we don't use mathematics and probabilities to determine trust. We use feeling, right? We use our heart. You can say our brain too, but we use the moment. You know, we use intuition. We use the gut. And when people trust each other, you know, they don't look at the minutiae. For the most part, I would say some do, but we don't look at the minutiae. We wait and we give the person a chance to prove themselves right, to give the results. When there's no trust, we count every little interaction and we do a tick mark and say, was this good? Was this bad? Was this good? Was this bad? And we look at every interaction as a mathematical equation. You know, where humans, we are inefficient. We inefficiently trust each other because in the long run, we are effective at both, you know, loving each other and drawing value from each other, even condoning the little inefficient bad things that we do along the way. And it is because of trust. And only humans can do that. And you must be inefficient when building trust, extremely inefficient when building trust.
Well, I think you nailed it. You have to decide, are you in the business of efficiency or are you in the business of effectiveness? And those two things sometimes can be complementary, but more often than not are opposed to each other. One of the challenges when you consider which way you want to go is also the business model that you operate under. Billing by the hour gravitates heavily toward efficiency. Now, I know some people who use that business model who they will even tell you, and I believe them, I trust them, that they put the customer's best interests at heart. But I think if you choose effectiveness, I would rather have a business model that puts effectiveness high on the scale and efficiency much lower. In other words, I want to be incentivized to be effective, not efficient. And that's one of the reasons we promote a business model based on value, is because focusing on value is focusing on being effective. Who determines if we're being effective? The customer does. Why? Because we first determine what's valuable to them, and then we set up a working arrangement where we determine what's valuable to them, and we make an agreement to work toward what's important to them. That's why the business model matters so much. And that's just one example of why effectiveness is always more important than efficiency. Correct. So Hector, I know you're going to be doing more on this topic. You're going to be unpacking it more. As we kind of wrap this up, any closing thoughts you'd want to add, just any insight maybe you want to drop a hint of where you're going to be going with this topic at Scaling New Heights?
Yeah, sure. I think we're going to be focusing more on measurements, and we couldn't dive deep enough in measurements. We'll probably dedicate an episode to measurements and how to create measurements and which are good measurements and bad measurements. But one of the things I want you to think about, and this is something that comes up in almost every one of my interactions with my clients, is almost every business owner believes or worries that if they give the reins, the financial reins, to someone else, delegate that they can steal from them. That's just such a common, it's a common fear that a lot of business owners have, which is why a lot of them want to control the books, they want to control the numbers. And in essence, being extremely ineffective. They're being efficient at making sure no one steals from them, but they're being ineffective at doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I think about those domes in the stores, you know, those domes in the ceiling, the black domes that may or may not have a camera inside of it. You know what I'm talking about, Kirk?
Yes, hanging down from the ceiling. So kind of almost, I think of it as a upside down dome, right?
It's an upside down dome, correct. You know, I don't know if you knew this, but in a store, there could be maybe 50 domes and maybe only 10 of them have cameras. Okay? You actually don't need to have a camera on every dome because you're not trying to catch somebody stealing. What are you trying to do? You're trying to deter somebody from stealing. So if you were efficient, you would measure the entire store, like record. Right? You record the entire store, every inch and every corner and every space and every blind spot, you would have a camera on it. You'd be extremely efficient at having all that data. But if at the end of the day, you can achieve the same result with less inputs, and you can create some illusion of protection by having those domes, that's actually really, really good. I mean, think about the other thing, and just about the same thing in malls. A lot of times when you go in the malls and you go into like these narrow spaces, or even in airports, you notice that they have these big mirrors, the circular mirrors that are kind of oval. I don't know how to describe, like concave or convex. You know what I'm talking about? The big mirror that gives you the full range of, you can see everything behind you. What are those things for? Like, what is that mirror for? You know, I have asked people, what is that for? Well, that's so when you're walking in a hallway, you can see that no one's walking and creeping behind you, and it'll give you a sense of security. But, you know, would that mirror deter anything? Like somebody was going to attack you from behind. Does it do anything? It absolutely does nothing. Like there's nothing valuable comes from that mirror, except that it is effective at making people feel safe. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So, yeah, so I think we'll be just diving into this whole concept of measurement, and, you know, whether measuring something arrives to efficiency or is it better to just not measure it and judge effectiveness? Because that's two different things, right? You measure efficiency, you judge effectiveness. And judgment is something a computer cannot do. A computer can measure all day long, but it can't really judge unless you program it to give a percentage of probability. And, you know, if it's 80% or more, give it yes or no answer, right? Computers only work in mathematical equations, only work in probabilities. Humans, we have the capacity to look at something that's staring us at our face, and how we feel about it could effectively make us change how we see it. I mean, it happens in politics all the time without getting into the details, but many people in politics, right, they believe their political position so much, so hard, that regardless of what they're seeing, they will have a different perception of it, because how you feel about something is much more important at the end of the day than how you measure that thing and what that number means. Sometimes even the numbers don't mean anything by themselves. You said the example of the doctor, right? Let's say you have a really bad disease that has a high, not terminal disease, but a disease that's very dangerous. And you're researching doctors, and there's two surgeons. One that has 60%, let's say 65% success rate at people not dying in the OR, and one that has, let's say, 20% success rate at people not dying in the OR, right? Or mortality rate. And if you were to use those numbers by themselves, nothing else, just the measurements, you would automatically say, well, I'm going to go with the doctor that has the least mortality rates in the OR, right? I mean, wouldn't that be the logical approach? But we're measuring possibly the wrong thing. You know, what were the cases that they were handling? You know, was the other doctor handling the worst cases of the worst cases that were all, you know, deemed as terminal, and he was actually able to save 20-something percent of the people? You know, so it depends on how you see things and the context around it. And sometimes measurements cloud your judgment if you're measuring either the wrong thing or you're measuring incomplete things. And I believe efficiency is the ultimate measurement of an incomplete thing.
Well, Hector, I think we've done pretty well taking two words and putting, you know, a comparison between them. So with that, I'll see you next week.
I'll see you next week.